Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. So I've been thinking about the word exceptional lately. When you hear the word exceptional, what do you think about? If somebody tells you, wow, that child is exceptional, typically you think that that's a good thing, right? That means that they stand out from the crowd, that they are unique in some ability or achievement. But exceptional doesn't always mean a good thing. It can actually mean the opposite, because the word exception means to be left out, to be not among what is common. In the realm of psychology, the word exceptional gets used when describing somebody who has one or more neurodivergent qualities. So, for example, somebody who is diagnosed as both gifted and ADHD would be twice exceptional. Somebody who's also autistic would be thrice exceptional. Now, most people view something like gifted as being a good thing, and so exceptional would make sense with that. But really, any neurodivergence means that you're just different from everybody else. Autism can have its ups and its downs. ADHD can have its benefits and its drawbacks. Gifted can have both as well. The word exceptional simply means that you stand out and are different from everybody else in some key way. Now, why have I been thinking about this in regards to The Hobbit? Well, one of the things that becomes more and more clear as the story goes on is that Bilbo is exceptional. Exceptional in the traditional sense of being or having a quality that sets him apart from everyone else in a good way. He's clever in a way that the dwarves aren't. He's careful in a way that they aren't. He thinks ahead like all of the best leaders, including Gandalf. And now that we're most of the way through the Mirkwood section, Bilbo has proven himself a few times to help the dwarves get out of sticky situations, or himself get out of a sticky situation. So he's exceptional in that regard, but he always was exceptional. When the dwarves meet him, they're apprehensive about bringing along this little hobbit to be their burglar. He didn't actually have any real experience doing it. And because of that, he was different from them. But he was also different from them because he wasn't one of them. He not only wasn't a dwarf, but he wasn't part of their group. He was somebody who was an other. Bilbo has always been an exception to the group. He's always been an outsider. What's interesting here is that their perspective of him changes. He goes from being somebody who is struggling to fit in to somebody who stands out on their own because he has abilities and qualities that set him aside from the group in a better than the group sort of way. They come to rely on him like Gandalf. Now, I hope you don't draw a conclusion that I'm not trying to make. I'm not trying to say that Bilbo could be diagnosed as ADHD or autistic or gifted or even any other neurodivergency. I'm not saying that specifically, but what I am saying is that exceptional people never, ever really fit in. They always stand out. And in many versions of stories like this, and in real life, oftentimes they are looked over as being not part of the group, not good enough to be part of it, or just slightly too awkward, or somebody who has interests that don't fit in with everyone else. And so they always stand apart from the group in kind of a negative isolation kind of way, until they prove their worth and somebody realizes, wow, I thought you were just a nerd, but it turns out that you have these qualities that I admire, that I find beneficial or useful. And then all of a sudden, people accept them more for who they are because they provide value, but they are never quite part of the group. Bilbo is going through a situation just like that here in the jail among the elves. He is not locked up like the dwarves are. He is off on his own again. He has to find a way to save them by himself. And when we get to the end of this section, once he's gotten them all in their barrels and he's ready to actually make the escape happen, he finds himself alone still. Because he goes above and beyond, looking after all of them. And once they're all taken care of, there's nobody left to take care of him. So again, Bilbo stands alone. Bilbo is exceptional. Last time we ended on this line, very soon the chief guard nodded his head. Then he laid it on the table and fell fast asleep. The butler went on talking and laughing to himself for a while without seeming to notice. I love how this plays out like an old timey comedy where one person does a thing and the other person is too drunk to notice. And so they keep doing the thing. It almost feels like a slapstick situation. And I kind of wish, in some regards, I don't know that we need to change this, but there's part of me that wonders what that slapstick version of the scene would look like. And I even double checked, because if you're going to find a slapstick version of a scene, it's probably in one of the Hobbit movies. But going back and looking at the scene in the movie, it's not really a slapstick scene, at least not until they get outside and then you have that crazy river thing where everybody's after them and they're juggling stuff and it just gets ridiculous. But the scene that we're in right now, where they're actually still in the jail cells and Bilbo's trying to get them free, it could have been a little bit more ridiculous, but I guess it wasn't. And maybe I don't really want that. Anyway, this is kind of an aside. Let's continue on with this, because that's just kind of the feeling I get here, is that this could be a silly situation. And there are moments of levity in here, but here, we'll keep going. So the Hobbit is creeping around. Bilbo's creeping around, trying to figure out what to do. And he realizes that the guards are falling asleep. And so we get this line. Very soon, the chief guard had no keys, but Bilbo was trotting as fast as he could along the passages toward the cells. Okay, so this line is interesting. And some of the other ways that Tolkien uses words in the section is distinctly different from anywhere else. Notice that he says, very soon the chief guard had no keys. He doesn't say Bilbo took the keys. He's just like, well, the keys just weren't there. But Bilbo was trotting as fast as he could toward the cells. He's implying what's happening without actually telling us what's happening. As if, well, who knows? The keys just disappeared. What's going on? And later we find out that even after Bilbo gets everyone out, he goes back and he gives him the keys back. Also, there's a note here in the very next paragraph that after he unlocks Balin's door, he locks it again. He doesn't leave the doors open or even just closed but unlocked. He closes them and then locks them again, as if some magic trick teleported the occupants out of the jail cell rather than they found a way to break the locks or pick the locks or something like that. It's interesting, right? He's setting up a situation where, and maybe this is intentional on Bilbo's part, that it just looks like the dwarves disappeared and the keys just disappeared out of the chief's pocket and then eventually returned, and the chief had no idea they were even missing to begin with. And the language of the scene confirms this. This is supposed to be, it's not really from the elves' perspective, but it's supposed to give us that sense that from the elves' perspective, they have no idea how this happened. This is a surprise. This is a magic trick. It's not magic, but it's a magic trick. Now, one thing that is magic is, of course, the ring, and Bilbo still needs to use the ring in order to save them. And yes, that occludes their ability to see him other than a wobbly looking shadow. But it doesn't say, there's another detail here that I wish Tolkien had described. He picks up the keys and he makes sure that they don't make sounds, or at least as best he can, because he doesn't want to wake anyone up. So that shows that even when he's holding something, even when he's walking somewhere and invisible, the sound doesn't get removed. The sound is not occluded. But we aren't told if the keys also disappear from sight when he lifts them. That isn't described here. So in my mind, there are keys floating around, trying not to clank and clink as they work their way to the jail cells. Which is kind of funny, but I don't know if that's accurate. Maybe the keys also turn invisible when they're picked up by somebody wearing the ring. We could go into debates about that in the future, and that seems like something worth checking out. But for now, we need to continue on in this story. So Bilbo goes up to Balin first. And remember, Balin is the one who's kind of among the dwarves the most aware of this situation. He keeps coming up. And Balin is very surprised. Bilbo just basically steps up out of nowhere, unlocks the door, and then gets him out. And then we get this. "No time now," said the hobbit. "You just follow me. We must all keep together and not risk getting separated. All of us must escape or none. And this is our last chance. If this is found out, goodness knows where the king will put you next, with chains on your hands and feet too, I expect. Don't argue. There's a good fellow." So he's taking control of the situation, but he is being very direct. "You just follow me." And then, in order to convince him to just do what he's there to do and to just follow and trust him, he threatens him, or sort of threatens him. He posits the idea of, hey, if they catch us doing this, the next thing that will come will be way worse. Who knows where they're going to put you? Who knows what deepest, darkest recesses of this place? They have other cells for even worse prisoners. But also, they're going to bind your hands and your feet too. That doesn't seem pleasant. I don't think you want that. So come along. That's a good fellow. There's a good fellow. So he goes around and he saves everybody. Well, at least everyone except for Thorin at this point. And in a sort of comedic way, they're being a little bit loud, at least louder than Bilbo is. And he says, "Drat this dwarvish racket," because it's very stressful. And it seems like they're way louder than they probably are to him. And we get some descriptions here about why they're able to achieve this with the autumn feast in the woods that night and most of the caves being empty. And then they make their way to Thorin's dungeon, far down in a deep place, and fortunately not far from the cellars. And reading through this again, I was thinking about the order of operations, and it occurred to me that it would make sense more to get Thorin first because he's in the most dangerous place, because you wouldn't want to take a bunch, like a dozen people, and get them to that hard to get place and make all that noise. Wouldn't it be easier to take Thorin to everyone else? But it seems, according to this, that Thorin's cell is much closer to the cellars. So it makes sense to bring everyone there and then go to the cellars from there. Also, because his section seems to be way deeper in the dungeon and probably has way less people around. It probably needs less actual guarding because it's so far away from everything else. We don't get an actual layout of this, but it seems to imply something like this. And when they show up, Thorin responds with a phrase that I found very interesting. He says, "Upon my word." Now, what does that mean? Well, I did some research because I've heard the phrase "my word" before, and I've never really thought about it. And "upon my word" seems like it's connected to that. But what does it actually mean? Well, it turns out that, of course, it's an old-fashioned English exclamation used to express surprise or shock or to emphasize sincerity. Much like saying "honestly" or "I swear" or something like that, which is less common today still. But I think we can understand what that means. "My word" specifically refers to your own honor, the person who's saying it, their honor or their oath or a promise, like, "on my word, I swear I will do this," right? Think of it as being the beginning of a sentence that sounds like that. And "upon" here acts like a formal preposition, basically meaning something like "on the basis of" or "swearing on my word, my honor," something like that. So the actual phrase itself means "I stake my word on this," or "I swear on my honor." And generally, this was seen as being not a blasphemous oath, like saying, you know, using God's name in vain or something like that, but more of an emphatic and mild oath. And so I was curious about this because I wanted to hear it in context in other ways. And it turns out that this phrase shows up in Charles Dickens, in Jane Austen, in the Pennwick Papers by Charles Dickens. There's the quote here, "Upon my word," said Mr. Pickwick, "it is wholly impossible for me to guess, on business perhaps." And in Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, there's the quote, "Upon my word, he is quite the handsomest man I ever saw in my life." So you can see how that kind of plays into the integrity of the person. And so basically, he's really just saying he's surprised. in a sort of formal kind of way, because he's Thorin. He's more formal than the other dwarves. And again, Thorin is impressed. He says, "A pretty fine burglar you make, it seems, when the time comes. I'm sure we are all forever at your service," meaning basically, we owe you one, buddy. So thanks for doing this. But you notice here, I started out this episode with a discussion about being exceptional. His exceptional qualities make him stand out. He says here, "Gandalf spoke true as usual" at the beginning of that sentence. We didn't trust that Gandalf would be accurate about this, but it turns out that you are actually good at this thing. So you were an exception to the party beforehand because we didn't expect you to be this valuable. But now that you are this valuable, you still have set yourself apart from us. It's both at the same time. Bilbo is never really one of the dwarves, for as much as they come to care about him. He's always different. There are some things in life that are absolutely worth investing in. At the top of that list is yourself, your knowledge, your experiences, and what better way to extend your knowledge than with the learning of different languages. It might be something you don't think about very often, but when you can speak other languages, it opens the doors in your own mind to understanding things differently. It opens the possibility of interacting with people and going places that you never thought you would have gone. And that's part of why I'm so glad that Rosetta Stone is sponsoring the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, because we all know J.R.R. Tolkien was a master of multiple languages, and I would love to be as capable as he is, and I may never get there, but with Rosetta Stone, I can get a step further. They are the experts who will help you learn faster and retain the information longer. Plus, you can learn anywhere you are, on an app, on a desktop, anywhere. So don't wait. Unlock your learning potential right now. Lord of the Rings Lorecast listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. So the scene continues and they work their way out of Thorin's cell. He takes them to the big barrels and he explains to them the story. And we get this. "We shall be bruised and battered to pieces and drowned too, for certain," they muttered, the dwarves. "We thought you had got some sensible notion when you managed to get hold of the keys. This is a mad idea." Now notice it's "they" muttered. It's not any one dwarf in particular. But they're not very happy with this idea. It seems too dangerous. And you think they would be thankful for anything, but this doesn't seem like something that they're willing to do. Of course, this makes sense. Dwarves are stubborn creatures, and I don't think they have a whole lot of, well, enjoyment of being thrown into a body of water closed into a container with the fear of drowning as being something that they are fond of doing, right? But then we get this response from Bilbo, and this feels comedic, but also clever at the same time. "Very well," said Bilbo, very downcast and also rather annoyed. "Come along back to your nice cells, and I will lock you all in again, and you can sit there comfortably and think of a better plan. But I don't suppose I shall ever get hold of the keys again, even if I feel inclined to try." So he's kind of playing this like, I don't know, like a parent in a situation with a kid who doesn't understand and then uses a clever way of basically getting them on board. And he's not really just saying like, directly, "Well, no, you have to do it because I'll never get the keys again, blah, 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 blah." He's instead showing them what will happen if they decide to decline doing what they can do right now. It's the rhetorical equivalent of like Aikido. Instead of pushing back and fighting directly, you take that person's energy and you allow it to go through. So in this case, he's basically saying, "Okay, well, let's think through this. If we go with your idea, what will the outcome be? Well, you'll never get out of the cells ever. So is that really what you want?" Right? Like, he's taking them with them. And of course, this seems to work. And we also get an explanation that fighting your way out of the magic gates would be basically impossible. And that's interesting because it reminds us here that the gates are closed by magic. This isn't just big gates. These are magical elven gates. And so there's something else going on there. Now, we get back to the two elves who are now passed out on the table. We get this line: "The wine of Dorwinion brings deep and pleasant dreams," reinforcing the idea that it's not just any regular wine. There's something about this wine that makes your dreams deep and pleasant. There would be a different expression on the face of the chief guard next day, even though Bilbo, before they went on, stole in and kind-heartedly put the keys back on his belt. This allows for the chief of the guard to basically say, like, well, I don't know what happened at all. Look, my keys are still here. I don't, like, he'll still get in trouble for falling asleep on the job, but it makes it seem like this was some sort of magical escape rather than something that he could have stopped by just not letting his keys get out or something like that. But of course, he's still going to get it. But Bilbo feels bad for him. This is it specifically notes here. That will save him some of the trouble he's in for, said Mr. Baggins. He's actually trying to be nice about this because Bilbo is a good person. And this reinforces that. So now we get this scene where they're all getting in the barrels and Balin is the one watching the guard. And Balin, again, is the key dwarf in this scene. He's the one who's older and a little bit more clever, and it makes sense that he would be the one that they put on watch here. And we get descriptions about the different barrels and how there were wine barrels, but those weren't so useful in the situation, so they had to go with barrels that were stuffed with other things, butter and apples and other foodstuffs, all sorts of things that they would have been putting in these barrels. And that makes it easier for them to kind of be a little bit more contained within the barrels. If it's too empty, you're going to fly around a lot. But if you're stuffed in there fairly tightly with a bunch of apples, then that's probably better than having no cushioning at all. And the dwarves have a hard time with this, but they're able to get everybody inside. And Bilbo does his best to stuff the barrels full of other things in order to try to make it as comfortable as possible. They take a look at where the air holes might be, all of that. Thorin himself gives the most trouble because, well, he doesn't want to be stuffed in a barrel, and he is royalty. But they realize that, no, this is something they have to do, and Balin eventually also makes a fuss, but is able to get in a barrel with the right air holes and all of that. Bilbo had done what he could to close the holes in the sides of the barrels and to fix on all the lids as safely as could be managed. And now he was left alone again, running around, putting the finishing touches to the packing, and hoping against hope that his plan would come off. Bilbo is exceptional. He's alone again. He's the one who has to stay back in order to make sure that they can get these barrels into the river. And that means that he has to figure out what he's going to do. But he doesn't have that much time. Only a minute or two after Balin's lid had been fitted on, there came the sound of voices and the flicker of lights. The elves come into the room, and we get this conversation. It gives us another glimpse into the nature of these elves. "Where's old Galleon the butler?" said one. "I haven't seen him at the tables tonight. He ought to be here now to show us what is to be done." "I shall be angry if the old slow coach is late," said another. "I have no wish to waste time down here while the song is up." They want to go up and party. They want to sing along. "Ha-ha!" came a cry. "Here's the old villain with his head on a jug. He's been having a little feast all to himself and his friend the captain." "Shake him! Wake him!" shouted the others impatiently. This plays out like you would find in any scene with people doing these mundane jobs, also wanting to, you know, finish up so they can get to the party, that sort of thing. Now, Galleon wakes up and he's not too happy about this. And he does this clever thing where he kind of covers for himself. And he puts the blame on them. "You're all late," he grumbles. "Here I am waiting and waiting down here while you fellows drink and make merry and forget your tasks. Small wonder if I fall asleep from weariness," trying to be like, it's not the wine. And then they turn this around on him and it turns into this humorous situation. "Small wonder," they said, "when the explanation stands close at hand in a jug." This is very British. This feels very British to me. The implications of the statements and the use of words to kind of corner people into a thing and make it seem obvious that what is implied is actually the real meaning of the situation rather than the thing that they're saying, you know, that kind of thing, which is, of course, wonderful. And then because they're all in the party spirit, they decide that they want some of that drink also. So they drink it. And they become mighty merry all of a sudden, which is a fun phrase to use. "I've become mighty merry." Then we get this. "Save us, Galleons," cried some. "You began your feasting early and muddled your wits. You have stacked some full casks here instead of the empty ones, if there is anything in wait." So they're suspicious that something's off, but they're also kind of drunk, and the butler's grumpy and also drunk, and so he responds, "Get on with the work. There is nothing in the feeling of weight in an idle tosspot's arms. These are the ones to go, and no others. Do as I say." And that confusion is what allows the dwarves to leave. But before we get them all leaving, we get this wonderful little song. Roll, 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 rolling down the hole. Heave-ho, splash, plump, down they go, down they bump. Quick little song, which is kind of funny when you think about it. Like, do we do things like just sing a little song just for a little while doing a little bit of work? But I think the answer is probably yes. Some people do. Like, this isn't a completely foreign thing. Sure, the elves like to sing and probably do so more than other races. But at the same time, people sing. People sing when they work. This is a very old and regular tradition. People still do this. Oftentimes we get songs stuck in our heads, and sometimes those songs correlate with the thing we're doing. Sometimes it's about doing work. Sometimes it's about children or a baby. Babies make us sing all the time. Pets make us sing. I have a feeling this is very common, even though it seems kind of silly. So they sang as first one barrel and then another rumbled to the dark opening that was pushed over into the cold water some feet below. Some were barrels really empty. Some were tubs neatly packed with a dwarf each. But down they all went, one after another, with many a clash and a bump, thudding on top of ones below, smacking into the water, jostling against the walls of the tunnel, knocking into one another, and bobbing away down the current. And it was just at this moment that Bilbo suddenly discovered the weak point in his plan. Remember what I said earlier? Bilbo is exceptional. He's all alone here, again. He needs to figure out what to do. Thanks again for tuning in to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And thank you for being a part of our Patreon. To those of you who have signed up, all 182 of you, thank you so much for your support. We don't have any new names to shout out this week, which is strange. I feel like we've been on a run lately. But if you'd like to get your name shouted out, sign up. If you'd like to get your name shouted out every week, then you can join us as a VIP patron. But you don't have to go that far. You can just get ad-free episodes, or you can sign up and get bonus episodes. The bonus episode this week, I'll be answering a question about the similarities between Melian and Sauron and how they both seem to affect the forest around them in different ways. Melian's girdle and the corruption of Mirkwood, and how those are similar and interesting when you compare and contrast them. So this is a very good question from The Waffle on Patreon, and a comment also. So I wanted to address that in the bonus episode because it's actually very cool. So if you are part of the Patreon and you have access to the bonus episodes, then stay for that. That's coming up next. And if you haven't already signed up, come join us. There's all sorts of fun stuff you can get, including t-shirts and stickers, and patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. You can check out everything on there, and it helps me keep going with the show. And I couldn't do it without all of you. So thank you so much for that support. All right, let's see if I can get through the entire list of VIP patrons without messing up. I probably can't. Here we go. AK Music Lover. I almost failed right at the beginning. Eldarion Was Right. Apollo Averiel. Azel Razzle. Barney D. Bo. Brandy D. Captain Metal. I already did it. I messed up again. Captain Legolas Turner. Cutter Metalworks. Daniel Nightweaver. David S. David M. Divine Madman. Fulcrum. Gerald CFC. Gimli A Break. Ginger Fury. Huon Is My Hero. Jezzer. Katie S. Capenna. Lori B. Mason Weathertop. Matt. Party Snacks. Philip M. Richard J. Rosie Rose. Single Ent Looking for Entwives. The Bestest Boy. TJT. And Tour Son of Hoor. I've done better in the past. I feel ashamed. But thank you for all of your support. Also, we got two new 5-star reviews that popped up on Apple that I get to read out because I can see these ones because they're from the US. If you'd like to help out, you can do that as well. And I'll read out these in a future episode. This one comes from Injustice. I don't know how to say that. That feels like a Warhammer thing. If you're one of the Warhammer guys, thanks for checking out the show. We have the 40K Lorecast just joined the network a few weeks back. So this one says, The one lore cast. One lore to rule them all, one lore to find them, one lore to bring them all, and for the lore fans, bind them. All within the lore cast where we listening lie. As far back as I can remember, my parents raised me and my siblings on the writings of Tolkien and Lewis. Finding the podcast has rekindled my enthusiasm for Tolkien's masterpieces and reminded me of the unique magic it all carries within their pages. Upon finding this podcast, which was the first to show up, it immediately inspired me to prepare to read The Hobbit and all the other books to my children when they're old enough to understand the story. Thank you for sharing your understanding of Tolkien's magic and for finding a simple way to explain the more difficult language that many nowadays cannot understand. Well, you're very welcome. And I'm so glad that you'll be enjoying these with your children. That's the best. That is absolutely the best. Then we have another one. This one comes from Celeb Remor the Bard, who writes, "Hearken to me, all ye peoples of the earth." Man, these are so good. You guys are very much in character here. "Whether ye be scholar or yeoman, lord or serf, elf or hobbit, this show shall open unto thee a new world of lore to search out and delve into. The host, Lord Tom of the Fair Robots of the Radio Lands in the South, has a voice charming as a dragon's, yet his topics indeed are fairer than the Silmarils wrought in the days of yore. This podcast is a light as of the trees of Valinor in a world darkened by the shadow of Morgoth, as well as all things mundane. Truly a haven of rest for any weary travelers who seek respite in these halls of lore. One forecast, I think that's supposed to be Lorecast, to rule them all, and may your halls ever blessed by the eternal flame." Oh, that's so cool. Thank you so much for that. And thank you to everybody for being a part of this and continuing to support the show. Share it with your friends, rate the show on whatever platform you listen to this on, and have a wonderful rest of your week. I'm going to go talk about girdles and forests and big, powerful beings. All right. I'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.